You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Well, and welcome to the Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill for Monday, the 4th of December 2017. Looking ahead to a day of action. Well, we're going to take in racing from Southall, Plumpton and Bakenham. You can hear it all on William Hill Racing Radio. Gets underway at 11:40. It's going to be Luke Elder, Ross Ferrari and John Budden taking you through the day's action, previewing the races and offering full selections. But for now, to look ahead to the day's racing and also to look back on some quality fare on Sunday, my name's John Gibby, joined in the studio by Mr. Rory Delaghi. Hi, Rory, how's it going?
It's going very well, John, thank you.
Fantastic. I understand you were having laptop issues earlier on, but all resolved now.
Well, you say issues. Updates, sure, a good thing, surely.
Yes.
But sometimes they can take a long time, and it's only natural that one afternoon when you're banging in winners is also the afternoon when you're stuck in front of a laptop that's not working, so you can't do much about it.
It really is. It's Sod's Law, isn't it? Well, we take a slight dip in quality, perhaps, from what we've been used to on Sunday, especially at Fairy House, with the cards on offer on Monday, Rory, but still punting opportunities are plenty, and we'll take in your Napa Next Best, first of all. So where does your Next Best run?
Both go at Plumpton. Was tempted by one at Southall, but I will stick to Plumpton, where the going should be good or just on the soft side of good tomorrow, which is unseasonal, I suppose. My Next Best is a little bit of a shot in the dark based on the prices. The 2.10 is a novice hurdle and a decent one for the track as well, in which you've got two who've got already shown a decent level of form. Solomon Gray for Dan Skelton and Knocknanus for Gary Moore. Both looked useful in bumpers, and both made promising starts over hurdles. Knocknanus winning at Plumpton last time out, and did that nicely by 12 lengths. Carries a penalty for that, and I think Solomon Gray will probably start favourite on the basis that he receives weight, and I wouldn't entirely put you off that one either, but I don't think this is a match, and there are some fancy prices about the others. We tend to pay a lot of attention to bumper form in novice hurdles and tend to ignore horses with decent flat form. So, as I said, it's like even money in 7-4, the front two in the market, but both Havisham and Thames Knight have got decent flat form to their name, which I think equates at least to what the good bumper performers were doing. And the latter, Thames Knight, at 20-1, strikes me as being a very big price. Jim Boyle doesn't have too many jumpers, but he's got a very good record of preparing them after a break. He's inherited Thames Knight, as it were, sold from Marcus Dragoning for $42,000 last month. And Liam Treadwell takes the ride. This is a horse who was regularly ridden by inexperienced claimers. Tyler Saunders rode Thames Knight on a regular basis. Was a winner off a mark of 75 at Goodwood in the summer, and went pretty close off a revised mark of 80 after that, and then was second off a slightly higher mark for, I assume, Marcus Dragoning's son in an amateur riders race at Epsom. Consistent performer given that kind of track. Plumpton's a little bit up and down, which will suit him. He goes very well at Epsom. Goes very well at Goodwood, so I think Plumpton will be no problem at all to Thames Knight. And if he's wound up for this, 20-1's a daft price.
Yeah.
You know, it may well be. The horse has only been with Jim Boyle since last month, so it may well be that, you know, his a lack of schooling over a concerted period of time may find him out against horses with experience over hurdles. But we're talking about experience. The front two in the market have had one run over hurdles each. So it's not like Thames Knight is thrown into the deep end here. And you know, he was a horse capable of winning off marks in the 80s on the flat. And that's pretty good.
I suppose the concern with the flat form being transferred to novice hurdles and beyond for these horses is that they've generally been racing over shorter and the stamina isn't necessarily assured. But just having a look at some of the in-running comments for Thames Knight, there's a lot of outpaced, outpaced.
It says a mile and a half. Well, I'm very much against milers going over hurdles. I think they can get away with it sometimes. But for me, if a horse is going to make the grade at a reasonable level over hurdles, they need to stay at least a mile and a half, maybe a bit further in the flat. And Thames Knight does. I should expect by being a son of Sir Percy. So, I wouldn't make him favourite for this. I wouldn't make him second favourite, but I wouldn't make him 20-1. And we are guessing a little bit as to how ready he is for his first assignment, and it may well be there's a kind of a getting-to-know-you venture. But, I think there's a fair bit going for him. And as I said, I certainly wouldn't want to be... to be against him at 20-1. Jim Boyle, rather, has only had 17 runners over hurdles in the last five seasons. Three of those have won, and you'd be making money if you backed them blind. So I'm not particularly worried about that, and I think he's a sporting next best.
Thames Knight, then, the next best for Rory De Laghi. And what about your nap? Are we going for something a little bit more obvious here?
A little bit. Something with a lot more form to her name, and... but she's not massively more obvious in terms of price. She'd be close to the outsider of the field again. In the previous race at Plumpton, the 140, is a staying handicap hurdle in which Tambura looks to gain her third consecutive win in the race and has clearly been lined up for it by Godfrey God Mondrell. He is known as God in point-to-point circles.
This wasn't Godfrey. Just someone you were sort of anointing.
Well, in fairness, he is... put on a pedestal by his legion of fans. He did win in his own colours over fences at Leicester a couple of years ago at an advanced age, did Godfrey. But Tambura, who runs in his colours, has been a decent staying mare for him over the years. She lost her way a little bit last season. But the key to her is she's worth following on her second or third run after a break. She's got a very good record. All but one of her wins have come on her second run or her third run after a break. And she comes here for a race she's won twice before. She won it last year off a higher mark. I think she's rated 121 when she won last year. She's rated 118 now. Zach Baker, who people were talking of as a promising young claimer when he won the Welsh Champion Hurdle recently on the new one, he's been around a little bit longer than a lot of people realise in point-to-point circles. And he's been on board Tambura for most of her runs under rules. They get on very well together. And she ran a race full of promise, I thought, in her reappearance at Chepstow. Clearly needed. I thought she blew up between the third last and the second last. Hung quite badly off the bridle as if she was in need of a second win, and then plugged on again to finish fourth. She'd be a lot fitter for that. Normally, you would look at the ground and say, you know, she's got form in heavy ground and the ground's going to be too quick for her. The ground was slightly quicker last year when she won. It was good all round when she won this contest. And as I said, she won it off a higher mark. She's only a seven-year-old. It's not like she's regressing. She just, as I said, lost her way for whatever reason. But she now comes back off a decent handicap mark. And she shouldn't be. When I looked at the tissue for this, she was the rank outsider. And that makes no sense at all. I'd nearly have her favourite for this. And I can see her being punted as well.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how she goes in her attempt to win this for a third time. And... by the looks of it, has won the race off a higher mark in the past as well.
Indeed, yeah. Yep.
Interesting. Tambura, then. The nap selection for Rory De Laghi in Monday's racing. And now we shift our attention from Monday to look back at some of the best racing from Sunday. Of course, at Ferry House, we had three Grade 1s. Impressively, all won by Gordon Elliott. Rory, it really feels like he is clearing up these big prizes on a Sunday across the Irish Sea.
Yeah, he's... a bit of a clutch trainer, isn't he? He tends to have days when he has six or seven winners. And while we've got no concern about Willie Mullins falling off a cliff, Gordon seems to have, in terms of the younger horses, the horses who come from Irish backgrounds particularly, he tends to have a real strength and depth. A lot of horses coming from the Irish point-to-point background, for example, that he's picked up, although one of his horses was... one of his winners today was a horse who'd run in the Racing Post Trophy on the flat for an English-based trainer, Mengley Khan. So he can get them from various sources. And of course, when he won the Triumph Hurdle with Tiger Roll a few years ago, and that horse was bought out of an English yard after winning a juvenile hurdle at Market Racing, of all places.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, the Elliot / Jigginstown axis, they've got eyes all over the place. And he's, again, sourced some very, very good horses. You know perfectly well that Willie Mullins is going to dig a few out, and Willie's modus operandi is very different. Gordon gets his horses geared up for the Grade 1, Grade 2 prizes in the autumn. Willie's more than happy to run potentially his very best horses in maiden or novice hurdles first time, then maybe a Grade 2 or Grade 3, and launch them onto the big stage in March. I don't think Gordon does an awful lot of testing his horses in gallops at home that are effectively races. That's the alleged modus operandi for Willie Mullins. His horses are thoroughly tested at home. They go for racecourse gallops, and they don't just have a little bit of a spin around. He does test them to find the pecking order, and there's a lot of things that we don't necessarily know about them that the yard do. Whereas with Gordon's horses, you can judge them exactly by what you see on the track.
Obviously, we're over a year on from a big switch in the politics, if you like, of Irish jumps racing. How much has Gordon Elliott been assisting in his rise up the training ranks by all those Giggins Town horses being moved to him just over a year ago?
Yeah, well, he would have been getting plenty of them anyway. But it certainly has not done Gordon any harm, to say the very least, that you had this split between Willie and Giggins Town. The reasons for which are, well, they're on record, but no one necessarily takes them as being gospel.
Yeah.
But, you know,
training fees allegedly, wasn't it?
Training fees allegedly. I think, yeah, the fees have to come into it. It seems like a strange thing, doesn't it? But Giggins Town have the O'Learys have a very strong idea of how their business should run and what the cost should be. And Willie Mullins isn't the kind of guy who needs to be dictated to. There are plenty of trainers there, including Gordon Elliott, I would say, who you can't afford to say, listen, I want to do things my way, and if you don't like it, take your horses away. Whereas Willie Mullins is in a remarkable position that he can say that to the most powerful owner around.
Got a couple of specific questions about two of the big winners for Gordon Elliott on Sunday. First of all, Apple's Jade. And I know this is an issue you have strong feelings about because we discussed this in the kitchen a little bit earlier on here at William Hill Towers. Still a big price for the champion hurdle. The trainer is pretty adamant she's going to go for the mare's hurdle. But on the evidence of her 9-length romp in the Hatton's Grace, surely she has the class to go close in the champion hurdle.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. There's no point saying, she doesn't have the speed for it, because you know, you have to face up to the facts of, you know, you might have said the same thing about Annie Parr. You know, most of her form, I really wanted her to run the champion hurdle 2 years before she did, and sadly it wasn't to be. And then, you know, she came in as a super sub and won it in remarkable style in what was effectively almost a course record, although the way times are measured have changed. And a lot of people, you know, she'd run in the Stairs Hurdle the year before over 3 miles. Most of her form had been over further, like Appleshade. Appleshade has not proven at 3 miles. So I don't get this notion that you should pigeonhole top-class hurdlers according to the chip they've run at. Fohin, of course, was a winner as a novice over 3 miles on heavy ground before he went and won the Neptune, and then he won the champion hurdle the following year. So, you know, those notions that we've had in the past have been blown out of the water, specifically by Willie Mullins, it has to be said, but there's no reason why others can't do the same thing. So I think, you know, there's a few people have said it's nice that the connections have ruled her out of the champion hurdle. Well, I say fair play to them if they don't enter her.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sure if you interviewed Gordon or indeed Michael O'Leary, they will probably tell you she's not going to go in the champion hurdle. There's no chance of her running. And then when the entries come out for the champion hurdle, she'll be in there. And she'll be in there, in inverted commas, just in case.
Yeah.
But you know what? Yeah. What's the scenario in which you'd have her in? There has to be a scenario.
And do you get to a situation where...
You get the situation where you realise she's going to win the race.
Well, Gordon Elliott says he wants to put his horses in the races he thinks they have the best chance of winning. Now, presumably, the barriers to her winning... I mean, the easiest race for her to win would be the easiest race. But surely there comes to a stage where, for whatever reason, and let's hope this doesn't happen, but for whatever reason, Fohin and Bouvardet both miss the race, surely she's got to go to the champion hurdle then.
Yes, exactly. But I hope it isn't just that scenario. I think the game is on a long road to nowhere if everyone's attitude is they run in the weakest race that we can find them. And that's, you know, the race that's most likely to win is the weakest race you can find. Yeah. If we've got a Cheltenham Festival in which we have options for horses, for Gold Cup and Champion Hurdle class horses, who would be fancy to win those races, where they constantly go for a weaker race, particularly when that race is given grade one status anyway, then I think that's got to be bad for the game long term. I fully accept that owners are and trainers are entitled to do exactly what they want, but we shouldn't necessarily facilitate that. We need to have a sport that celebrates excellence. And you can say what you like about the Mares Hurdle, but it is not a great race. It was a good race to watch last year. I enjoyed it a lot. But it should be. It was the ideal stepping stone for Applejade because she was only a 5 year old last year. The task of 5 year olds in the Champion Hurdle is damn near impossible. Catch it being a complete fluke.
And thinking about last year in the Mares Hurdle as well, you know, we were served up that fantastic spectacle, but there have been some whispers about Room Room Mag possibly being retired, for example. Don't know what's happening with Limini. So if Applejade was to go to that race with neither of those two horses reopposing, it almost seems unfair that she should be allowed to run in the race because surely she went by half the track.
Well, of course, we've had this in the past. And, you know, it's great to have multiple winners of graded races at the Cheltenham Festival, but it's not as good as having those horses running in the better races. And as we've seen with Annie Parr running in that, despite the fact that her last hurdle fall stopped her winning that easily, and that proved a good stepping stone for her to win the Champion Hurdle the next year. And there's no reason why it shouldn't be used like that. But I think it's a little sad if you just use it as a springboard for the same race the following year. So we'll see. The worst case scenario for punters is when firms go non-runner, no bet for the festival and they offer you 6-1 Applejade for the Champion Hurdle. You know, if you want to have an anti-post bet and you've got a strong view that something is going to change the minds of the Jigginstown team and Gordon Elliott, then back Applejade. What price is she for the Champion anyway?
Oh, well, you caught me out here.
I'm halfway to looking at that myself.
With William Hill, which is, of course, the prices we'll be mentioning here on the podcast. She's 16-1.
Yeah.
She's a shorter price any race at the festival. I was seeing earlier on as well. We have got this market.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Any race at the 2018 festival, 7-4 in that market.
Yes. Occasionally, you get scenarios where a horse is actually a bigger price to win any race than they are to win an individual race.
Yeah.
Which seems bizarre, but actually makes sense if you think about it.
Yeah, yeah.
If a horse is almost certain to run in the tougher race.
Yeah.
Then it should be a bigger price than it is to win the easier race.
Right, we are running out of time, Rory.
Indeed, yep.
Very quickly, I want to ask about Def Duty in the Drimmore Novice Chase. Of course, that Grade 1 contest, he's won that well and now looks like he could be a high-class... Well, he really was a high-class Novice Chase prospect for Gordon Elliott, but looks like he, whatever race he goes for at Cheltenham, without trying to mention the C-word too much, it looks like he's surely going to be one of the leading contenders.
Yeah, I thought the form was meaningless. I'll go out on a limb and say there were various good horses in that race. Denario de Zobo was a top-class juvenile last season. Snow Falcon, we know all about. And it was a bit of a match between Rathvinden and Death Duty. But Death Duty was allowed to set a pretty slow pace throughout. And a lot of these small-field novice events in Ireland are very, very hard to weigh up because they don't go much of a pace. And it does tend to suit horses who get things their own way. And it's just a real shame that Death Duty was allowed to dictate here and do what he liked. He looked top-class, but of course he looked top-class last season before lining up one of the shortest price favourites for an open race at the Cheltenham Festival, and he was absolutely stuffed out of sight when he came down at the last.
Allegedly came home ill after that, but would you not be buying that?
Well, no, I wouldn't say that was his form, but you wouldn't judge him purely on that. But then he finished third at Punchestown after that. And if you
take a lot of people forget about that, don't
you? Yeah, that's pretty much the run to judge him on. And I think he's a different horse off a strong gallop. I think he struggles a little bit with that. We don't know how fast he can go. That's the thing. He might have been going nearly as fast as he could today. But he jumped well, and he enjoys soft ground, and he looked very good today. But it didn't tell us an awful lot we didn't know already. And I thought it was particularly disappointing that Shattered Love wasn't in there, because I like her an awful lot.
It was going to be her nap, wasn't she?
She was my nap at 20s. The form of her run last time out was franked by the winner of the last. Presenting Percy bolted up in the big handicap chase, and she had him miles behind last time out, and that would have given her a big chance in the novice chase. And she's a front runner, so what would have happened if she'd gone head to head? I think that's probably why she didn't run in the end. I don't know if that was an official excuse, but having Death Duty and Shattered Love going at each other from the start would have made it for an entirely different race.
Officially, she had a temperature.
Right, you are.
I'm sure you felt ill as well.
Yeah, well, I had a bit of a temperature when I saw that. Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, Rory, best of luck with your bets tomorrow, and thanks for joining us here on the Daily Racing Podcast.
Thank you very much indeed.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.